Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I'm excited for another episode today and a really fascinating conversation with a leader that I know you all are going to enjoy meeting and getting to know today. Just a quick announcement before we get started. If you're enjoying the podcast, I encourage you to take a couple of different steps. First of all, make sure that you like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform so that you're aware of new episodes as they drop. And also share the podcast with your friends, your colleagues, your coworkers as we continue to build this nonprofit community and we're all there for each other. Today's topic is going to be a really fascinating one, as I mentioned. We're going to talk about the radical act of choosing common ground, how to make unlikely allies in your organization to help propel change. And to join us in that conversation, I'm thrilled to welcome Nisha Anand. Nisha is an Indian American activist. She's a boundary-busting national leader for social and racial justice. She was once a grassroots activist arrested in Burma for pro-democracy demonstrations. Today, she's known as a leader who cultivates unlikely and unconventional partnerships to create change. She is also the CEO of an organization called Dream.org that you may be familiar with. Nisha, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thank you for having me on.
Nisha, I shared just a little bit about your background with our listeners, but I invite you to introduce yourself and tell folks about your work, your organization, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, like you already said, I'm the CEO of Dream.org, which I think is a really special place. We're a national social justice nonprofit, and most of our work is around criminal justice reform and climate and figuring out what to do about the climate crisis. What makes us really unique is the way we go about it, that every single solution that we put forward, that we get behind, that we move for, is one that will bring people together rather than tear them apart. In this moment of polarization and this increasing climate of you're with us or you're against us, everything we do at Dream.org stands against it. We believe you can have progress without polarization. And so a lot of the legislation we pass will be bipartisan in nature. A lot of the reskilling and retooling for jobs of the future, we do it with unconventional partnerships. We make sure to bring together the folks who have been marginalized and without a job with tech CEOs who are building new careers and inventing new jobs as we go along. How do we bring these folks together to create a future that works for everybody? So that's what we do at Dream.org. And I'm honored to be the CEO, which was a lifelong path, which you talked about from being a young activist, a little bit of a very big rabble rouser growing up. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, in the South. In the 80s, it was a very different climate to be an activist with immigrant parents who really their only hope for me was to be either follow my dad's footsteps and get into engineering or to marry well, quite honestly, make sure to marry in my class, be successful, whatever that vision was. And I broke the mold. I had no interest in engineering, maybe a little interest in engineering, but not enough. And I certainly wasn't going to live my life just to marry well, or whatever it was, how it was phrased to me when I was young. So I broke the mold. And I always just was very passionate about social change and social justice. And I was that person who had felt left out and left behind. And I didn't want anyone to have that same feeling, just being kind of a misfit of sorts growing up. I wanted to make sure there was a place for us misfits. And my long path, which led me to Dream.org, is really about experimenting with every part of social change. The whole ecosystem is necessary. You need people on the streets protesting. You need folks newly awakened to ideas, arguing and discussing in academia. You need people on the inside pushing change, people on the outside pushing change. You need it all. And I feel like I was able to experiment and do that. But the place that was home for me is Dream.org, this place where we are bringing people together to solve some of the toughest problems. That's where I felt most effective, where I feel like I've made the most change, and where I've actually gotten to fulfill that mission of changing the world for the better.
Nisha, you mentioned we do live in a polarized time, and the pushback to what you just said is oftentimes that, you know, there are, you know, different sides, or there are, you know, we're pulled to the extremes. Your organization and your work believes that it's possible to choose common ground, to actually come together and get meaningful things done. Share with us a couple of tips or strategies for our listeners who may be listening to this and saying, I feel like I'm, you know, in an echo chamber sometimes. I'm talking, preaching to the choir, people who already believe in our mission. How do you get outside that echo chamber? How do you get to that place of common ground?
Absolutely. I agree. We are in an echo chamber often. I can read one set of news and you can read another set of news, and we are completely in different worlds with how we interpret what's going on among us. And so recognizing that we don't have the same information, that the conclusions that we draw based on our life experience, based on what we read, are really just uniquely curated to our lives right now. So us having a different opinion might not actually be that our values are different. It's certainly a circumstance of how we've grown up, what we're reading, what we're doing. So first, just recognizing that we might just be living in different worlds. And when you meet somebody from a different world, you don't automatically write them off. So if I meet someone from a culture very different than my own, who's never been to this country, I've never been to their country, I don't immediately say everything you believe is wrong, everything I believe is right. You get curious. You want to know what is different about your world than my world. What has brought you to the conclusion of this or that? We know how to be curious about folks so different than us. For some reason, we've shut down against our own neighbors who are different than us too. So curiosity is the most important part. And often people will say, I can understand how to get curious about a neighbor, or I understand how my family has different beliefs and I love them anyway. And when I say, well, then let's try to solve a problem together, it stops. But we have examples in our lives of solving the problems together. When we order a pizza, I'm vegetarian and, you know, my friend's non-vegetarian, we know how to agree and order a pizza. We are very different. It comes from a very different value place, right? Like I might have a stance of not eating meat is very strong value for me, but I don't shame them for their value that's different. And we can still eat a pizza together. We can order, we can split it in half. We can get two different pizzas. They can go veg for the night, you know, whatever. There are a lot of solutions out there without making them wrong and me right, or me wrong and them right. We know how to do that. What I was curious about is, can we extend that for big problems? Can we do it at scale? And we have so many examples in history when we've done it. We've had immense progress when we've had people from different sides of the aisle come together. Are we too far polarized now? No. I, in fact, have examples that we can come together. And we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of a piece of legislation that my team helped build, organize for, and get across the finish line. It's called the First Step Act. It was passed 5 years ago. It's a criminal justice reform legislation that we started working on under the Obama administration. And when I was told we're going to pass bipartisan criminal justice reform, that was an oxymoron in my ears. I had never met a Republican at that point who wanted criminal justice reform. I grew up in the 90s in Atlanta. Newt Gingrich was my speaker of the House growing up. So when that crime bill in 1994 ushered in that era of mass incarceration, I was on the front lines fighting against it. As a senior in high school, very adamant, like, this is horrible. So the idea of bipartisan criminal justice reform, I didn't think it was possible. But there was a lot of Republicans who had an interest in criminal justice reform at the time. We had fiscal conservatives who didn't want to spend taxpayer dollar on prison systems that waste a ton of money and get terrible results. We had social conservatives who care about second chances, usually anti-death penalty, really believe in the idea of redemption. We had libertarian conservatives who thought there was an over-incarceration, especially when we're dealing with drug laws. And so that's three parts of the Republican Party who wanted some form of criminal justice reform, not for the same reasons as me, perhaps, but they would still come to the table. So how could we work together and do something to change what has become a even worse criminal justice system over the last few decades? And we found out there was a lot of common ground. And then Trump was elected. And we had to decide, can we still push it through with a Republican-controlled House, Senate, and executive? And what we asked ourselves was simply, can we afford not to do it during this administration? We have to keep pushing through. There's nobody that's inside prison that doesn't want us to work with anybody to get them home. And so we passed the First Step Act. 89 senators voted yes. So that's not just a little bit of bipartisanship. That is massive bipartisanship. At the end of the day, one person has to sign that bill. That's the president. So how do you organize to get Trump to sign that bill? Well, we thought about how to get him to sign that bill. And since that day, almost 30,000 people are home from prison from this one piece of legislation that, against all odds, we just kept organizing and finding the place where we had common values and really putting together, kind of ordering that pizza as we went along. And it wasn't easy. And you know all of the things that are hard with a coalition, but when the people are at front and center and knowing that there are people who deserve to be home and you keep that first and foremost in the front of your mind, you just keep going and great things can happen.
Nisha, you mentioned such an important word, and it was curiosity. And it just kept replaying in my mind as you were talking about, for nonprofit leaders who are thinking about their issue, whatever it is, whether it's climate, whether it's education, health, human services, and thinking about those who are natural opponents or on the opposite side, being curious of how can I reach that person? How can I get past that entrenchment? Talk a little bit more about the importance of curiosity and how you build that discipline, because I imagine it can get frustrating at times too. This is not something that is an easy lift or a barrier, a wall that you're going to break through every time or, on the first attempt.
Absolutely. Curiosity is so important. I mean, I feel like whenever a podcast host asks me about this, I want to turn it back on to them because podcast hosts are naturally curious. They want to know. They're asking that next question. They're digging deeper because that's just how we are. We are born knowing absolutely nothing, right? We come into this world to learn and learn and learn. So it's in us. I think that's the first thing, is that curiosity. It's in us. But for some reason, there's shame about not knowing, or there's this appearance of I have to look right and I have to be right. And that's just that's the deep inner work you have to do to break down. But if you want anyone to be curious about you, the natural thing is you have to be curious. Just be curious first, be curious most. We do this funny thing, and I see it a lot on the left, where we think that here's my set of beliefs. This is what is right and what's wrong. These are the things that I'm never going to compromise on. And then we find someone who agrees with 95% of that, and we sit there and battle them on the five they don't, and they become the enemy just for that 5% they don't. And I mean, my husband's a great example. We met being activists together. We are totally in line with our values. It's why we married each other. But there are a few things, now that we've been married for 20 something years, almost 20 years, that I know, it's like, wow, that we know we disagree on, and they're so minor, but we never waste a chance to like talk about those issues and disagree on them and point out how each other's wrong. And it's like, but look at all of this other stuff where there's common ground on. So we do that with everyone. And we feel like we can't be in coalition then with people who might disagree on this little piece. And I just want to flip it around and say, if you even focus on that little piece, you're missing this 95% opportunity, the 95% opportunity. But you can keep going further and further down and find people where you disagree on 90% of things, but there's 10 that you agree on. And that's what excites me, is that that means there is still work to do with that group of people. And being curious about that, let's forget about the areas we disagree. We're never going to figure that out. One of the biggest partners that we had on criminal justice reform and on the First Step Act was Coke Industries. And they came at it. The general counsel there was a man named Mark Holden. He had family who had been formerly incarcerated. He understood, as more of a libertarian conservative, exactly how messed up the prison system could be. So he was at the table, and we did not have much else in common, but I could trust why he was there. He had that personal tie to the issue, and he had a political economic concern that I could understand, even though it wasn't mine. I will never ever find anything to work with for Coke Industries on climate. at least back then. Maybe things have changed a bit. So on this issue, we could work together. And that was really, really important. And then we'll find other issues to work on. We did have some common ground on tech reskilling and getting people into tech jobs in the future. You can find more once you open it up to just a little bit, but you've got to ask the questions and you have to ask why. One thing we know we all have in common is we want to live in a safe world. We want our families to be safe. We want to have opportunities. And all of us think we're good people and we're doing things for the right reasons. And we believe our things because that's the right thing to do. That's common ground enough to be curious and ask, well, why do you think that?
Nisha, I'm going to take you to a big picture question here. Okay. You mentioned as children, we're naturally curious. Even as adults, you use the analogy of ordering a pizza. We're familiar with working together to come to a solution. But still, I'm struck by the use of the phrase, the radical act of choosing common ground. In your view, what makes what you're describing so radical?
A lot of folks right now, there's what's politically easy and sometimes even politically expedient to do, which is to dig into your corner and say, I am right. And you get a lot of points when you can shame who's wrong. And in fact, one of the oldest schools of organizing that I was raised in is to always pick your opponent, to be very specific and make them the target and the enemy to organize around. That's how you win points. If you can identify a bad guy, then you can rally people around the bad guy. And I see this mimicked in social media, that it would be much easier for me when something happens out of a Republican controlled House or Senate in a local area or a policy I don't like. It would be very easy to say, those folks are stupid. Look at this, you know, stupid way that they thought. And I would get millions of likes for it. That's what gets rewarded right now. What's much harder is to say, I see why they pushed that across, and I see where we misunderstood each other and where we didn't get to influence the policy of that time. And here's what we can do to make that link so it doesn't happen this way without our voices being included. That's not popular. People want to say shame, shame. And so I think it's radical to say, I refuse to do that. I refuse to make you my enemy. When I make someone else an enemy of me, they can come back and make me the enemy of them. And I know what happens when people who look like me or from my circumstances are made the enemy from people like power. And if I know how harmful that is, I can't do it back at them. To me, that makes no sense. But we're being asked to do that often. And I'm raising my kids here in Berkeley, California. And in Berkeley, it's kind of left, left, farther left, really far left. And the stories I hear sometimes in class is how scared people are to speak up and give an opinion that's not in the exact language that's appropriate. I've heard if you just ask a question, there's always somebody in class to shame you for not using the right language. That's anti-curiosity. That does not help anybody grow. It doesn't help us progress in any way. I have never met someone who's made big changes in their life that said, I did it after somebody ridiculed me publicly. That's why I changed. It doesn't work. If I say you're a racist, now join my cause, that's never going to be something that works. And yet we are kind of rewarded for that type of behavior. And so for me, it's radical to say, I won't engage in it. To say, in fact, the folks that you think are the enemy, I'm inviting them to dinner. I'm inviting them to sit at my table. I also think that it means that we don't get a lot of, we get criticized and misunderstood quite a bit. We're told that we're compromising our values, or that we are kind of like weak kumbaya, let's all, you know, sit around the campfire.
Yeah, I want to probe that with you real quick before we wrap up, Nisha, is that how do you, it strikes me that common ground is very different than a watered down solution, right?
Yes.
As a change maker, as someone who is pushing for meaningful change, how do you ensure that as you're searching for common ground, you're not compromising core values, that you're not watering down your own position and beliefs so much that the solution is ultimately ineffective at driving the
Yeah.
change.
I think that's the most important question that when I say radical common ground that I'd love to answer is that first and foremost, you have to know yourself and your values. And at dream.org, we never hide that we have a very specific agenda, that we start with our progressive values and our agenda first and foremost. But we also look for, we draw a little bit of a Venn diagram where we have at the top our progressive values. Then the next circle is radical inclusivity. How big can we draw people in? What's the biggest circle we can possibly bring in? And the final one is equity, that for us, making sure equity is the top of our list is a core value for us. And we're that sweet spot right in the middle, which is that progressive values, radical inclusivity, equity up front. Knowing that about ourselves means that when I go to the table with someone who's very different values, I'm never compromising mine. They can count on me to be me 100% of the time. You've talked to me for 20 minutes. I'm sure you realize right now, I cannot change who I am, even if I tried. I come to the table, you can count on me. I am always going to bring up equity when we're talking about these big solutions, because that's something that's always been important to me, that left out, left behind misfit. I'm always going to see it. I'm going to see when your solution might not include a community perspective. That is the blind spot of some of our Republicans. So when they come to the table, they know that, oh, Nisha's here. She's going to point out perhaps the blind spot I don't see, just like I expect them to point out my blind spots. I often will not think of individual liberties or a certain pursuit of an opportunity that my solution might crumble. I don't think that way. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just not the first thing that comes for my value set. And so if I can point out the blind spots they have, they can point out my blind spots, we actually get a better solution, not watered down. The example I often give is climate. If I was to design a solution living out here in California on climate change, I'd think about wildfires, electric vehicles, drought, and I'd come up with something that really works in California. But if I don't talk to farmers on the front line of climate change in middle America, they have a very different experience of what they need in the climate bill. It doesn't mean I'm going to compromise on mine. It means I'm going to grow the knowledge of what the actual problem is, and we're going to come up with a good solution.
Nisha, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us on the podcast today. For those who want to learn more about your approach, learn more about your organization, dream.org, what is the best way for folks to get in touch with you?
Well, definitely go to dream.org. We make it really easy for you to find us. And we have a lot of programs. If you are someone who wants to make change around the country and you want to have progress without that polarization, we are a home for that type of change maker. And we have scholarships for different programs. We have cohort training so that in your local area, you can make change. There are a lot of ways to get involved.
Nisha, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. For all of us, all of those who are listening to the podcast, thank you so much for being part of this community. You can always reach out to us and find me on the web at nielsenconsults.com or on your favorite social media platform. Nisha, thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with another episode.